director for labor. State Officers Compensation Commission come to order. It is 11 o'clock on the 6th, and I believe we have Dick Knapp, Nancy Such, and Gordon Harrison on the teleconference. If so, would you each confirm that?
Nancy Such is here.
Gordon Harrison here.
Dick Knapp here on the phone.
Okay. Then we are all ready to go. We have draft recommendations. We have the minutes of the previous meeting. And we have, have an agenda to approve. That's the first thing.
Hey, Rick, can you get a little closer to the mic?
Get the mic a little closer. Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah, much better.
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. I think everyone has an agenda. Are there any comments on the agenda, or could we have a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll move to approve.
Second.
It's moved and seconded to approve the agenda. Are there objections? Without objections, the agenda is approved. That brings us to the approval of the minutes of the October 15th meeting. Are there questions on the minutes of the previous meeting? If not, could we have a motion to approve those minutes?
Move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and second to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. And that brings us to the review and finalization of the primary findings and recommendations. And
there's a couple things I'd like to point out regarding those.
Okay.
The first is on the motions that the commission approved at the last meeting, the one regarding the geographic differential, Nancy went back and listened to the recording to confirm we had it correct.
A little closer to the mic.
Okay. Hopefully this is better.
Yes, that's
yep.
Better.
Much better.
So the motion that was approved indicated essentially that commissioners located in Juneau would receive the geographic differential commensurate with other state employees. And so I just want to confirm your intent of that and want to point out that there are geographic differentials for various locations throughout the state. Today, we only have commissioners in Juneau and Anchorage, but not long ago, we did have a commissioner whose duty station was Fairbanks. Fairbanks also receives a geodiff. So I didn't know if it was your intent to only award geodiff to commissioners in Juneau and not to commissioners that perhaps at some point might be located in a location such as Fairbanks that also has a geodiff. So I just wanted to mention that to ensure that you realize it and confirm what you intended.
I hadn't thought of the Fairbanks question.
I hadn't either, but I think that if we have a difference for Juneau, we should also have a difference for any other location where a commissioner might be stationed. I think we omitted it because we just didn't realize it or hadn't thought about it. But if there is a difference for Fairbanks or if they were stationed in Wasilla or Balmer, I don't know if there's a geodiff for there or not.
There's not for those.
But we could word it that if there is a geodifference for the location that a commissioner is stationed, then he or she will be given that geodifference.
And I think looking at the motion that was approved at the last meeting, what it said was awarded geographic difference for commissioners stationed in Juneau commensurate with other state employees. If we just removed from that stationed in Juneau, if there's a geodiff in the location, in their location, they would then get it. Does that
I think that's the way to do it, yeah.
This is Dick Knapp. Let me I understand the equity part of this, of the position. But on the other hand, one of the objectives, in my mind at least, is to basically have the commissioners stationed in Juneau. They, in my opinion, they should be at the seat of government. Some don't. And I think that if you put a geodiff all over the state, it's open sesame to commissioners live wherever you want, and you'll be covered. Now, and I know that's not on the surface equitable, but I think it addresses the issue of commissioners being at the seat of government in Juneau.
This is Gordon. It would seem to me that a pay difference of what we're talking about here is probably not going to influence how commissioners choose or prefer to live, and I think it's probably well, I don't know. I assume that the executive branch makes these decisions, the governor, about where people can live and so on. And actually giving a geographic differential to Juneau may help keep some people here. I don't know. But I would think if we are going to do it, it should be given wherever there is a geographical differential.
Right, and right now there's only 4 commissioners that are located in Juneau out of all of the commissioners. So I know that traditionally Juneau was the seat of government, but over the years that's changed considerably. And I don't think that we want to make a statement that we think the seat of government should be in Juneau, and therefore, you know, and establish a pay rate because of that. I think we're really getting out of our area that we're supposed to be looking at by doing that.
All right, point taken, Rick. This is Dick Knapp. Yeah. Okay.
I am a little uneasy about the whole recommendation, because I think it will end up being characterized differently than it was intended, and I'm not sure it's worth the consideration if that's the case. I personally, until or unless the seat of government becomes a different place, I am kind of a supporter of commissioners being in Juneau at least for the first half of the year, because of the interaction and the, just the operation of the system in dealing with the legislative branch. So I probably would feel okay about it in Juneau, but I'm not sure I feel okay about it overall. And I think getting into the question may be counterproductive.
Mr. Chairman, this is Gordon. It also is a substantial amount of money too. I mean, so when we're increasing the increase for those commissioners, 4 commissioners would be pretty good. You know, this time around they've got, I think, what is it, 5% or something? Plus the other raises they're getting. So anyway, so there is the question of how large a raise some people are getting. I guess my personal opinion is that I will go either way with this, depending on the sense of the others. I could be happy to skip this year, but if the rest of the members want to pursue it, I'm okay with it too.
This is Dick Knapp. Quite frankly, you know, in my opinion, I understand your reluctance to take on unneeded or unwanted challenges, Rick. I understand that. But, you know, in my book, what we did is either right or it isn't. And I'm convinced that it's right. And if it's right, then we ought to do it.
And this is Tom McGrath. I agree with what Dick just said, because if you're a deputy commissioner and you're stationed in Juneau, then you get the geo difference. Or if you were in Fairbanks, you would get the geo difference there. And going along with our subsequent motion that if you're a deputy commissioner and replace a commissioner, you would keep your same pay, then it would stand to reason that they would also get the geo difference. If you excluded them from the geo difference, then would that affect the last motion that we made? So to me, it's just the right thing to do. There's a lot of people that look at this and their studies done, and that's the way they come up with the geo difference. And it's obviously more expensive to live in Juneau than it is in Anchorage, or more expensive to live in Fairbanks than it is in Anchorage. So I think that we should recognize the work that other people have done and go along with it.
That is, as it stands, the proposal for recommendation one. You were going through the, Nikki, you were going through all the recommendations.
Well, that's the one recommendation that I felt I needed to make certain you knew the situation and I was clear on what the recommendation was, that you really intended it just to be Juneau. So if you don't intend it to just be Juneau, then I think we need to change.
Well, the motion was just Juneau.
It was.
So in order to have it correct on the record, it would take a motion to adopt the language as it is now drafted, right?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, this is Gordon. I think that if we're going to do it, we should make it to apply to other places where there is a differential. So I would move that we amend the motion to make this a general rule that where if a commissioner is stationed in a location where there is a pay differential because of that location, that commissioner should get it.
We have a motion to adopt the language as it is now drafted.
Well, hold on. I'm not sure. Where is the language? Are we looking at the minutes, or are we looking at this draft findings?
Gordon, if you look at page 2 of the minutes.
Oh, the minutes.
The wording of the motion is there.
Okay. All right. Let me get there.
And the change would be to change the motion to award a geographic difference for commissioners.
Commensurate with other state employees. So my motion is to delete stationed in Juneau.
I would second that.
Okay, we have a motion and second to delete stations in Juneau. Is there objection to the adoption of that amendment to recommendation number one? Without objection, recommendation one will be award geographic difference for commissioners commensurate with other state employees. And that is adopted. So let's go to the second recommendation and explanation and just discuss them, run down.
So the second recommendation was to grant the statutory, essentially, wage increases for 2010, 11, and 12, which were 2, 2, and 2, to the governor, lieutenant governor, and commissioners. as of July 1st, 2014, and in the future grant AS 3927 wages to the – oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I'm reading – it was amended.
Yeah, that was taken out.
Let's move on. It was – you actually separated that into two motions. So effective July 1st, 2014, commissioners' pay will be $146,142.67, which includes 1% granted under AS 3927 for 2014. And so essentially this motion increases the commissioner's salaries, accounting for the statutory increases that were granted to other state employees. So it is the 2, 2, and 2 in 10, 11, and 12, 1% for effective July 1st, 2013, and then 1% that will be effective July 1st, 2014, which is the same effective date of the salary. So this 146 includes the 1% being granted in 2014. And then as we explained at the last meeting, SB 95 grants them another 2.5% effective 7/1/15. So you don't need to state anything about that. The legislation grants that.
So that we actually should reconsider our motion then to approve these minutes, because the second motion there on page 2 shouldn't be there.
Actually, Gordon, if you'll see right below it, we showed that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's recorded as rescinded.
Oh, I see. Okay, I'm sorry. Rescinded. Okay, I am sorry. I didn't see that.
I didn't catch it when I started reading it either. I was
okay.
Caused confusion.
Okay, I have a question in terms of just how I'm reading.
Closer, Rick.
I'm just trying to sort my papers in a way that I can understand where we're getting this. Okay. What are you reading from?
Your minutes.
The minutes.
Okay, here's the last page of the minutes. Okay. We're on this one right here.
Okay. Not. Is this supposed to be the same thing?
I'm not sure. Oh, I think Tom might have. Did you send this to Rick?
These were your original ones? Right. Okay. It was turned into.
There was possibly a few minor changes when you actually approved them.
This is what I had in my notes as what we passed also.
Okay. I want to just go off the right sheet. Okay. So that is the second recommendation, second draft recommendation. Are there any questions on that one? So that doesn't require any amendment or any action. We took the action at the last meeting. So the next one is, we did this, I followed your order, so now we're back to Lieutenant Governor's salary?
Governor's salary. And the governor's salary will increase to $150,872.79 as of July 1st, 2014. And you'll recall that you arrived at that number based on increasing the salary you last approved that was effective in 2011. So we applied the statutory increases granted since that date up through 7/1/14, since it's the effective date of this, you know, providing they're not denied by the legislature. And then you're granting the 2.5% that it will be applied to the statutory schedule as well, effective 7/1/15.
Okay, and that was the previous recommendation, and that's what action was taken on. So the next one is Lieutenant Governor.
It is, and we did the same. You all did the same thing to the Lieutenant Governor's salary, and so it will be increased to $119,657.73 as of 7/1/2014, and that will also increase by another 2.5% effective 7/1/2015.
And the final one was the Deputy Commissioner replacing a commissioner.
Yes. And I do have a question. As I drafted these based on discussion, it occurred to me that if they maintain their salary, is it your intent for them to stay at that salary until the commissioner's salary catches up to that? Because the question that will arise, are they going to be, let me think this through. Actually, the more I say it, I don't know what will happen in future legislative sessions, but if they were to grant the statutory cost of living increases to commissioners in the future, like they did in SB 95, will those commissioners who are already receiving a higher salary get that increase or not? That will be a question that arises, and I don't know.
You mean if a deputy commissioner became a commissioner, would he get the step increases also?
The cost of living increases. If he's essentially on a frozen salary because he's maintained his higher salary, do you see what I'm saying?
So he moves to Juneau after being...
That's a question as well. Yes, Rick. That I hadn't thought of that
and
one.
And then stays there. And then stays there for 8 years. Is he frozen at the higher level, or does he get the step increases as if he had stayed a deputy? Or she?
Yeah. Let me say that again to make sure we're saying the same thing. Let's just say I'm a deputy commissioner and I'm making $160,000 a year. And I take the position of commissioner, and sure, I'm in Anchorage as a deputy, and I move to Juneau as a commissioner. So when I get to Juneau, I accept that position, my salary under this will stay at $160,000 a year because I'm going to maintain my old salary. Will the 5% geodiff then be added on? And what if in the next legislative session they do the same thing they did this year and grant statutory increases to commissioners? Am I going to get, say, the 1% they grant, the cost of living to the statutory schedule, on top of my 160 and my geodiff as well? Or does my salary stay at 160 until you all, you know, until the salary of commissioners catch up? Do you see what I'm saying? That will be a question that could arise, and I realize we may be a ways out from that. And
if the legislature give statutory increases to commissioners, they would also give statutory increases to deputy commissioners at the same time.
They're not
normally.
Yes, they would.
And so I would think that the deputy commissioner who became the commissioner would get that increase. But if we don't spell it out, or if somebody doesn't spell it out, it could be problematic in the future.
It will be a question that we'll have. Do we apply it because their salary is already higher?
Mm-hmm.
Or do they not get any increases until the commissioner's salary catches up to theirs? That will be the dilemma that we have.
This is Gordon. I think unless we just assume that this hypothetical deputy commissioner would continue with any cost of living or statutory increases, I think that otherwise it would become much too complicated. I think it's going to be rare. I think it's more of a theoretical problem. I'm not crazy about about pay differentials among commissioners. I think they should be basically the same. This could lead to a situation where one commissioner was sort of out of line with the others. But I think that's just the fact of life. And so I would think that the salary of that higher paid deputy commissioner would just continue on and get whatever increases were due to him. I mean, if he were still deputy commissioner, he would get them. So I don't know, or she. I don't know. I think it'd be way too complicated to start withholding and determining when things were caught up and so on.
Well,
right now you have one acting commissioner that replaced Brian Buescher, I believe.
Right.
And she's the acting commissioner, so she's paid as in her old capacity, I would imagine, or is she paid as a commissioner now?
If her salary as a deputy commissioner is less than what commissioners are currently being paid, it would be increased to that of commissioner. If her salary was higher, we wouldn't reduce it. We would leave her at the higher rate while she's acting.
Yeah, you know,
so
it
sounds like
nap.
You already have a mechanism to do that.
For acting, we do, but if she was as of today, without, you know, not considering what you're proposing, if she's making more, and I'm uncertain on her, if she's making more than what the commissioners are currently being paid, if she accepted that job on a permanent basis, we would decrease her salary today.
Right.
But under this motion, if that you have all approved, we wouldn't. But then the question would come up in 2015, 7/1/14 for FY15.
Does she get the 1%?
Oh, I'm sorry, 7/1/15. The question would become, does she get that 2.5% or not?
This is Dick Knapp again. And you know, Nikki, you bring up some very good points. But, you know, as I remember in our discussions on this particular issue, the whole idea was not to have a guy who fleeted up to commissioner forego his higher salary that he had, okay? On the other hand, once we put in the game saver for him and give him the extra 5%, it might not be a bad idea to say, okay, and that's going to be your salary, and you're going to forego any increases until other commissioners catch up with you and you're all on the same path. Because he now... Don't forget, he's getting paid. You saved his salary while he was a commissioner and fleeting up, and he's going to enjoy that higher salary while the other commissioners catch up. But now when they do catch up with him, now he's a commissioner. And from an equity standpoint, it doesn't sound bad to me to have him now in the commissioner's ranks. Pay-wise.
The
I think it'd be an extremely rare.
Recommendations is kind of bringing me back to something I had thought about. We are making small changes in areas that the legislature has considered and has taken action on in the last years, recent years. And I am again having second thoughts about those changes in an area that they're present and considering and doing things on. I don't know, you know, that just informally I've thought about whether we should be making the changes of this type in the direct, unique format that this commission holds on the politically sensitive salary questions, or whether we should be making these as recommendations to the legislature to be carried forward in the normal process of the setting of salaries that are not so politically sensitive. And I'm kind of thinking that out loud as we look at pretty small details.
Rick,
anyway.
If we should pass, hypothetically speaking, if we should pass what we have on paper right now, that still goes to public hearings, does it not?
Yes, it does.
And in the course of those public hearings, there would be input that would be at least listened to and maybe even considered, true?
Yes.
Okay.
Our final recommendations, I mean, we put out the preliminary recommendations, and then we hear public input on what the recommendations were,
mm-hmm.
and then go from there forward with a final adoption that goes to the legislature.
Yeah. Well, you know, and like I said, so there's another bite at this apple if someone turns up some irrationality in our logic or thinking. So you get a chance to play it with the public. So in my opinion, all we can do is give it our best shot, throw it to the public, see what they think, and then adjust.
Nikki, would you change that if it were you? I mean, you're kind of the office that has to administer this. And is this going to cause problems for your office, or should we clarify the final motion as to do they get the raise or not, so that we don't cause problems for your office and administratively in the future?
It's my preference that you clarify it, because it will become a question, if not before, on July 1st, 2015, when the if there's a commissioner that's making more as a result of this. And today we don't, obviously we don't have that today, but we could between now and then. So it will become an issue then. From an administrative standpoint, whether they receive the increases or we essentially freeze them at their prior rate of pay, we can do either. We have situations, we have rules that apply to other situations that do both of those things. So we're already managing them, and this would just be one more added to it. So we could do it either way. We could administratively grant the increases or keep them essentially frozen at their old rate of pay until the salary of commissioners catches up.
this is Gordon. It seems to me that the rationale this whole this motion was that you didn't want to financially penalize somebody who is in a deputy commissioner position from taking the commissioner's job. If that deputy commissioner stayed as deputy commissioner, he would get his 2.5 increase in 2015. So there is a penalty if we say that his pay will be frozen. There is a penalty involved. It's maybe not huge, but if our motivation was to remove any financial disincentives from taking the job, I think that the pay increases should apply to him.
Right. Ms. Tom McGrath, I agree. And I would make a motion that in the motion, if a deputy commissioner replaces a commissioner from the same department without a break in service, the deputy commissioner will retain his or her pay rate. Then I would put comma with statutory subsequent increases, comma, while he holds the position of commissioner. And that would mean that he would get those subsequent increases if he maintained that position.
I'll second the motion.
Four words, with statutory subsequent increases.
Okay. And if you're going to amend this motion, there's one thing I also want to point out is that what's not said in the motion is that they retain their prior salary if it's higher than that of commissioner. This just says we'll retain his or her pay rate. We don't mean they'll retain it if it's lower.
Oh, right.
And when I knew you didn't mean that, but we probably should add that in as well. And when I drafted the recommendations, I did insert something about if their current salary exceeds the authorized salary for department head. So the motion should probably be amended to include something like that.
Okay, so retain his pay rate if higher with statutory subsequent increases.
Retain his
pay rate
higher pay rate,
comma, if higher with statutory subsequent increases. So you're adding six words now instead of four. Does that do it?
Okay. Tom, what about that 5% we talked about?
Well, the 5% is if they have a geo diff in Juno. So that's already covered in our first motion.
No, I thought if a deputy commissioner fleeted up, this is a recollection of our discussions, if he fleeted up to commissioner, we're going to let him, without a break under all those conditions, we were going to let him keep his higher salary, and then in recognition that he was taking on now the responsibilities of a commissioner, give him an extra, and the number was 5%. You can argue.
This is Gordon. We dropped that.
Okay.
That was I deliberately left out of this motion.
Okay. All right. Good enough. All right.
And
that's
fine. I have my notes from that day, and we did cross that out.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Okay.
Does that work, Nikki?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Okay, did you make that as a motion?
I made that as a motion.
Okay, we need
I seconded the motion, Gordon.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to amend Deputy Commissioner replacement recommendation. Are there objections? Would you restate or read the amendment as it would read?
The motion will now read, if a deputy commissioner replaces the commissioner from the same department without a break in service, the deputy commissioner will retain his or her pay rate, if higher, with statutory subsequent increases while he holds the position of commissioner.
Is there objection to the adoption of the motion recommendation number four? If there's no objection, that is adopted. We now have the four recommendations adopted for basically the public hearing process. These are, again, still preliminary findings. We'll have to set a hearing schedule. And we also, do we have anyone on the teleconference anywhere that is interested in testifying before the commission on the recommendations?
There's no one.
Well, Rick, as you know, this is Dick. Dick Knapp, I'm going to be off, so.
Well, maybe we'll get some public input. Get something out there on the table.
Are there any comments on the way the findings and recommendations are drafted? Any edits that you want made?
I think they're straightforward. I think
what your preliminary findings and recommendations that you and Gordon did this one.
Yes.
Would need to be updated then with what we did today, right? Before we went to public hearing?
Yes, you're absolutely right. We will need to clarify on page, in a couple places actually, will need to clarify that deputy commissioners that are appointed receiving a higher salary will get subsequent statutory increases. That will need to be added. I already drafted them. No intent wasn't for a deputy commissioner to keep their former salary if it was lower. So I already drafted them in that manner. So unless you have other edits, the only change that would need to be made is to
the geographic difference?
Yes.
Well, and Nikki, this is Gordon. At the end of the first page, we'd want to in that phrase there we'd that you have highlighted, we'd want to add specify that this would happen only if the salary were higher.
I already included that, Gordon, knowing that was your intent.
Okay, let me read this. Oh, yeah, I got it. All right, okay, I'm sorry. I got it. Nikki, another comment I have about the format of these recommendations, and that is it seems to me that somehow they should be presented in their formal statutory form. That is to say, we should these motions and these recommendations should be written so that they slide seamlessly into the existing statute. Do you know what I'm talking about? You know what I mean?
Because they're not actually put into statute.
Isn't there a section about, like, say, governor's salary? It says the governor's salary somewhere in statute, and that's what we've amended. So we're actually amending a statute about the governor's salary, aren't we?
No, we're not, Gordon. There used to be statutes that specified the governor's salary, but those were repealed when this commission was established, and it now states, and this isn't the exact wording, but it basically states that the governor's salary is set by this commission. And so these become law if not disapproved by the legislature.
Right, and so where do they appear in law?
They don't.
So nobody can read the statutes and find out what the governor's making or the lieutenant governor?
No, they would look to your report. And.
That's not the way we did it. I remember the first time.
Oh, it is, actually. I mean, it wasn't amended. Remember the very.
Well, what about the legislator salaries? There was a statute that set the legislator salaries, and we amended that statute, or our recommendations took the form of an amendment to that, didn't they?
No. Remember, there was a bill introduced, disapproving them, and that. Hearings, it didn't move. So there was never any legislation that amended statute.
Well, no, not legislation, but doesn't our action in effect amend statute? Aren't we amending? I mean, there was a statute that said that a legislative salary was whatever it was, $24,000 a year or something, and our action spoke to that statute and changed that number. I thought. I mean, that's my recollection, because I remember asking that question and dealing with it, and I think that our recommendations address the statutes where the salaries were set. Well, let's we don't need to take the commission's time to argue that, but or discuss it. But let's look back at that and see. All I'm saying is that if necessary, if somebody wants to know what the legislature's paid or what the governor's paid, they don't want to have to track down and read some report that may not be easy to find. So we can talk about this.
Okay.
Well, let's go back and look at that. I'm trying to remember, Gordon, exactly how we did it too, and that's part of, I think, my reluctance in small changes in areas that the legislature has actually acted on. I worry about the way this commission sits in a constitutional sense in dealing with law adopted by legislative inaction.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, I understand that, but what do you have in mind when you say that? Are you thinking about the motion about maintaining the deputy commissioner's situation if he's making more money, or what?
I'm a little bit worried that as we get into the small details in areas where they have acted.
Have they acted on that? Is that something they've ever addressed?
Oh, they haven't acted on that particular one.
Uh-huh.
But I'm wondering where we're not in a politically sensitive area, but we're really in a management area that just makes sense in terms of management and relative salaries, not the governor's salary, not the legislature's salary, but the things that they've actually added or changed in terms of granting a statutory increase following a schedule or something else. I think if they're doing it and we're doing it, I think we bring up questions of how the authority of this commission actually works.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. What we the legislature granted the increases to the commissioner's salary. They've actually changed it from the way where we set it, and they were scheduled to get the next one too, the 2.5. So we sort of accepted that, but we granted them some back pay increase in effect, so that the base was higher. They did not extend that those increases to the governor, and we are. So we are by doing something that they did not, and when the legislature does something and doesn't do something else, the presumption is that it deliberately didn't do that something else. So presumably the legislature decided not to increase the governor's salary, and we are deciding to do it. So I think that is an issue that is important, and I think it's the one I guess you're talking about, which is to what extent should we contradict or get in the way of legislative process on these matters. And I think it's a good question.
On the other hand, Gordon, if we don't, what's our function?
Well, that's a good point.
Well, the other side of it, of course, is that the function is to handle the political hot potatoes, and the question is, what do we do in the general management areas versus the politically difficult areas? And that's, you know, it's a fair question and can be argued pretty effectively from either side.
But this is Gordon again. Having said what I said, and I think Dick is correct. They have given us a job to set these salaries, and if they don't like what we're doing, they have the chance to veto them. So the legislature will review what we're doing, and so I think that if we have done something that's obviously counter to what they want to see done, they can stop this from happening. And I think our job is to not wring our hands about the politics and so on, but to look at the question of what is a reasonable salary and do our job and set those salaries. And if a legislator doesn't like them, they can deal with the politics of it.
Well said, Gordon.
back to the question of just exactly what kind of format that.
Yeah. And Gordon, I did find something, and it's 3923570, and it looks like the final recommendations. What we have to do is follow them with, and it's in the front of your binder. There's a tab AS3923. It says the commission shall, on transmitting its final recommendations for the compensation of legislators, the governor, lieutenant governor, each principal executive department head to the legislature, file the recommendations in the office of the lieutenant governor. When the recommendations become effective, the commission shall certify the copy of the recommendations on file in the office of lieutenant governor. I don't
know
if that's what you're recalling, Gordon.
Well, I guess I don't either. But it seemed to me that when I was writing up those recommendations for the legislature and so on, that we were drafting it in with statutory language that was to essentially replace what was in the statute. But I may be wrong about that, and I'll look it up. And Nikki, we can talk about it, and if we need to, we can consult some lawyers at the state about the form. It's just strictly a formal thing. It's not a substantive matter.
How about if we do this? I have the minor change we know to make to the recommendations, and then Gordon and I will figure out if we need to change the format at all, because if it does replace statute. So once we do that in the next day or two, I'll email those the final draft to all of you just for your concurrence, since it will change slightly at least from what you've seen here. And if you could all just respond to me that that you approve of it, then I'll proceed. But remember, because of the Open Meetings Act, you can't discuss them amongst yourself through email. But if you could just respond to me, then I'll proceed and ensure they're filed by November 15th, which is the deadline, or issued.
And then we'll have another public hearing.
We will need to decide when we want to hold those public hearings today so that I can appropriately notice them.
And we have deadlines that we have to back up to in terms of when we do that, in terms of submittal to the legislature, too.
Right.
Yes. They must be submitted to the legislature by the 10th day of session.
But there's got to be a final adoption
prior
to that.
Yes. So that we have time to make any modifications.
Right.
And it looks like under duties of the commission C that we only need to have one public hearing.
Yeah. In the past, you've held two.
Yeah. And I'm not sure why we held the second one. What was the kind of remember?
I think just to make sure that people had adequate opportunity. But because of the very limited number of people that have asked to testify in the past, I would recommend that we only have one public hearing. Even though I was contacted by the press several times before this meeting, I said, I'm not going to go on camera or talk to you. Come to the meeting. And that didn't work. So and they make comments anyway, and they make up anything they want to make up, so it doesn't really matter. So so my feeling is let's have one public hearing, and it needs to be at least 20 days from today, I believe.
That's a meeting notice. So I think that doesn't apply, I don't believe, to public hearings. So we just need to give preferably 10 days public notice of the hearing.
The earlier in December, I think the better, me personally, but I'm pretty open.
So you do have a calendar in the front of your binder? You want to look at mine, Rick? This is the one, this will show December of this year. I have 2014 too as well.
What's your schedule, Nikki?
Actually, I'm pretty open through Christmas. I have some time off after that. So, you know, if you want the first, I don't think we should do it too close to Christmas. People will be occupied with other things. But, you know, the first couple of weeks work well for me if there's a date in there.
Gordon, what were you thinking?
Oh, I'm thinking maybe the first week of December.
For me, generally, the middle of the week is better. Tom, any ideas?
I just circled the third. It would be my preference. I think it's early in the month. It's the middle of the week. It's far enough out that we can get public notice.
Well, I was going to try the fourth, so
okay,
we're the same. Gordon?
Well, I'm scheduled to return from my cabin on a hunting trip on the 1st, and sometimes we can get hammered in there and knocked down, and, I mean, just don't fly. So if we didn't get back until Monday night or something and I was going to come up, Wednesday would be better for me, the 4th, I think. Gives me a little bit of flexibility there.
Let me.
I will confirm that this room's available, and I'll just stick my head in here and ask him so we can pick a different date if that doesn't work.
Okay.
Sometime it is. They're renovating this hole.
Okay, that's what he just informed me that they will be out of this building. They're moving into another building, and they don't yet know what their conference room situation will be like.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd probably be best if we find another location. I can look for a room in the Atwood building, or if you have another suggestion, I could pursue it. True. The Alaska Labor Relations Agency has a hearing room that would have seating.
Whatever is most reasonable has access and, you know, meets the requirements for that and everything
sure.
else.
I think what I'll do is I'll first try the Alaska Labor Relations Agency, and if that's not I'll find a location.
Okay.
We'll at last resort, we have a conference room in the Outway building. I don't think the setup's ideal, but it will work. I mean, it's accessible. We can record the meeting. So I will get back to you on the location. And is 10:30 or 11 an acceptable time or afternoon? I'm thinking for Gordon, I'm assuming, Gordon, would you want to fly up the morning of the meeting?
Yeah, that would be best.
So the flight, praying is timely, arrives around 9.
Yeah. So 10 or 10:30 would be good.
Well, 10:30 is fine. But the thing that I thought, that if we're trying to get people to testify, we can have something before and then break for lunch and then continue if we have anybody that comes in. That gives people that are working a chance to come say something if they want to. I don't know that we'll get anybody, you know, if we get 4 people, we'll have twice as many as we usually have.
Okay, so to ensure we don't cut it too close with a possible flight delay of a few minutes or something, why don't we do 11?
That's fine.
Okay.
Gordon?
Fine.
If you're out of here by 2, are you back in Juneau okay?
Yeah, I think there's a 3:30 that I can 3:30 plane that I can get on.
Okay.
Or there used to be.
So do you want me to advertise the public hearing with an ending time, or how? I don't think in prior years we did that. We just said starts at, you know, a specific time.
That's right, and there is a later flight, of course. So if you know, if things are, people are wanting to testify, I can stay late. It's.
Yeah, I think we should hear people out if we actually.
Yeah, sure.
I'll just
say it starts at 11. Well, but then if on the other hand, if people say, oh well, they're starting at 11, I'll come by at 3. So maybe there should be a.
Well, I think in years past, if we didn't have anybody here at about 1:30, then
we call it quits.
So we could just say in the notice that if there is nobody in attendance at 1:30 in the afternoon to testify, then the meeting will be over at that time.
So generally what we've done is come back at 1, and if we had anybody, they testified, and by about 1:15 we gave up if nobody came.
Okay, I'll put some statement in there about unless, whatever, the meeting will adjourn.
The meeting will continue at 1 o'clock if there are people present to testify.
So do you want me to advertise it from 11 to 12? And then 1?
See, if we set 2 o'clock, then we got to stay there, sit there until 2.
I'd say 1 o'clock.
Okay. Do you want to bring lunch in then?
Yeah, that's easy.
Yeah.
I'm going to advertise it as 11 to 1, and I'll have some sort of caveat if there's unless all testimony has not been heard, and the meeting will continue until it's been heard, essentially, or something.
Yeah, somehow if people could give notice that they intend to testify at a certain time or something, notify their intent to be there after 1 o'clock. And of course, we can always take written testimony.
I'll just say
11:20.
I'd say 11 to 1. Yeah.
Okay, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
All right, and then would you want to set? Do you want to have the final meeting after that testimony to finalize the recommendations, or do you want to schedule it for a later date?
It would be nice to be done with the final recommendation. And if we, we ask for public testimony, we don't have it at 11, but we ask for it before we come to testify, before we start the final consideration. I think it's good to hear them out.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have anybody, which is usually the case, we can go over the recommendations, make any final changes, anything we want to do.
Rick, we can't hear you.
I'm sorry. I was too far back from the mic. I was going to say that we can convene the meeting, ask for public testimony. If we have any, we can take it then. We can then go on and go through the recommendations, the final and approval. And if people come in any time before 1, we can go to public testimony when they come in. But we should have enough time in that 2 hours to get the final meeting done with and have the final product so we don't have to meet again.
Or I think what we've done is adjourned the hearing and then convened the meeting so that maybe this should be noticed as a public hearing as well as a meeting.
Right. Typically what we've done is we've held the public hearing and then we started the meeting, say, at 1. I don't remember what time.
Right, right.
We waited for all testimony to be complete.
Right.
Waited for anyone to show up, and then we held the
meeting. I think we have to notice the fact that we will meet as well as hold a hearing.
Can they be noticed concurrently for time, so there'll be a meeting and public hearing from 11 to 1?
Well, I think there should be a public hearing from 11 to 1, and then the meeting will convene at 1, and then presumably it won't take us long to finalize them. I would try to separate. I think we've separated them in the past as two distinct.
Yes, in the past.
Well, just so that we don't, I mean, I'm afraid we'll end up sitting here for 2 hours before we do anything. So I would at least think there needs to be some way to be able to have the meeting. I would say public hearing at 11 o'clock.
11 to 12:30 or 11 to 12? What I can do is I will check with the Department of Law and confirm that I could advertise it as public hearing and meeting. Worst case scenario, you approve the final recommendations and someone shows up to testify, and then you may perhaps choose to go back and revisit those, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would be neater if we left the period open from 11 to 1, and we can spend an hour of that eating lunch if we need to, and see if anybody shows up, and then at 1, adjourn the public hearing and convene the meeting and do our business. I think that would be procedurally neater.
That's fine. I'm trying to figure out a way to avoid sitting for an hour with our normal degree of public input.
Bring your Kindle, Rick.
Okay. Whatever Department of Law says to give us flexibility to have consideration while we wait and discussion and be able to discuss on the record and go through things, I mean, that's of value, that's all.
Okay. I will inquire with them if we have to have a definitive public hearing, you know, conclude that, then a meeting. If it can be advertised as public hearing and meeting between 11 and 1, I'll do that. But I'll seek clarification.
Okay. And if we get any notification, I don't know what the form of notification would be about another member appointed.
I'll let you know immediately.
Let us know so we can at least bring them up to date as to what the considerations are.
So this is Gordon. Dick, are you going to be off by the time of this hearing?
Yes, and I was going to say a couple of words, and I'll say them right now. Number one, Rick knew this, but in order to take a spot on another board, specifically Marine Transportation Advisory Board, I had to resign from this group. And I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed working with all you folks, and I wanted to thank you. And I wanted to thank you, Nikki, for all the work you did. I really enjoyed it. But I, as of the 9th of this month, I am off. And then they'll announce my appointment to the Marine Transportation Advisory Board. But it was a pleasure, and I enjoyed it, and thanks. Thanks for letting me participate.
Yeah, so the three of us will take the firestorm.
And it was good meeting you, Dick. Thank you very much for your input, and it was very valuable. Thank you.
I will call boards and commissions after this meeting and see where they're at with that approval.
Okay. And, Dick, I add my thanks not just for this time but for several other capacities in many years.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks.
And then if there is a new member, you'll send them a packet?
I will.
Right away so that they can get up to speed? And just one question. I have had calls from the press, and what I've told them in the past is come to the public meeting and you can hear what you want to hear. I'm not going to say anything other times. Is that okay? Or
I think that may be a way to get some participation from them. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, I just tell the press to go talk to the chairman, but then I find out that he dropped his cell phone in the harbor and he can't be talked to. So have you retrieved your cell phone?
Actually, yes, I have. I haven't taught it to swim, but
So that's my response. You're going to be my response.
I got another one. Okay, we have a schedule. We have the draft recommendations. Is there other business to come before the commission?
I move to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. It is 12:15. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
Okay. Signing off from Florida, guys.
Okay. Hey, Rick. What? If I'm serious, actually, about referring people to you, what telephone number should I give them?
You can give them my 843-1388.
Hold it.
843-1388.
1388. Okay.
That's the best one. I've got that AT&T phone back working, but I'm using the other one just because it's the only one that works in Western Alaska.
Okay. All right. Thank you all very much. Dick, it was a pleasure working with you, too.